Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure and great honor again of speaking with Dr. Mahmood Khan, who is PepsiCo's Vice Chairman and Chief Scientific Officer. Hi, Mahmood.
Hi, how are you, Andrew?
I'm very good, thank you very much. Very good to be speaking with you, and thanks very much for giving us your time, Mahmood. So first of all, can you give us a brief introduction to yourself to kick off, please?
So as you mentioned, I have a number of responsibilities at PepsiCo, which include running our global R&D as well as the company's sustainability agenda. Originally, I'm a British-trained physician, went to medical school, trained in internal medicine, and then came to the U.S. as an international Kellogg scholar to train in nutrition and endocrinology. Ended up on faculty at the University of Minnesota, both at the medical school and the College of Agriculture, having spent about 9 years practicing in diabetes and doing research in diabetes and metabolic disease, most recently at the Mayo Clinic. I then joined industry at Takeda Pharmaceuticals, where I became president of R&D eventually, and from there, 9 years ago, almost the date, I had the wonderful pleasure of joining PepsiCo, and it's been an amazing and fun ride ever since.
Great, great. Well, some overlap there. Then I know some of the colleagues, your ex-colleagues at Takeda, who do venturing and that as well. So good you got the overlap there. Okay, so can you give us a brief introduction to PepsiCo, please, and particularly your strategic objectives in these areas of innovation and business change, which we're particularly interested in?
Well, look, at PepsiCo, there's a number of ways you can think about it. Everybody knows PepsiCo from all of our brands, and as many people, as you know, and many people don't know, is we have a very diverse portfolio of 22 major global brands, which, we look at as our billion-dollar brands. But behind the brands is a company that is driven by three words, and that's performance with purpose. And we think about our performance with purpose agenda. It was first articulated actually 9 years ago, just around the time I joined the company, by our CEO and chairman, Indra Nooyi. Mm-hmm. And it was a major reason why I joined the company, because for us, it's about not just making money as a business, which every business does, but it was about the how. And we've looked at this in three pillars, what we call planet, people, and product. And I can give you a little bit of insight into there. Of course, from a product point of view, this is how the consumer sees us. It's about the composition of our products. It's how we make our products. It's the nutritional value of our products, and we have a whole spectrum of what you might call fun for you all the way through to good for you, like Quaker Oats and Tropicana, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
From a planet point of view, what's very important is our footprint in our environment, and in essence, it's our impact on the land where our crops are cultivated, the water use, both from starting on the farm all the way through to our operations. It's the waste that is generated in terms of packaging, and as well as greenhouse gases, and what we can do to help lead our industry in being the most conservative in terms of the impact that we have on the environment, and what we can do to replenish these vital natural resources, which, as everybody knows, are diminishing, and we need to do everything we can. And then from a people point of view, we look at not just the employees that work within our four walls of PepsiCo, but in our entire supply chain, starting from the farm all the way to the people who put product on the shelf in the supermarket where our customers buy our products. And we think of our workforce really as an extension throughout that supply chain. Whether it's the livelihood of farmers, it's the livelihood of people who work in our supply companies, the suppliers and our supply partners, and ultimately those work directly for us. And I can give you lots of examples beyond that, but let me just stop there and see where you'd like to pursue further.
No, that's great. And I particularly like your performance with purpose. I wrote a book 10 years ago in the corporate venturing space, which is based around purpose to performance and going through process and people and partners by doing your venturing. And that was 10 years ago. So these P's and that were around and that around the same time and looking for that. That's great. And in terms of to achieve these things that you're looking to achieve around planet and people, what are some of the key technologies and business models that you are seeing opportunities now in that for your business?
Well, so if you think about, let's start with probably the biggest impact on our environment is global farming practices. As you know, mm-hmm. it's the number one source of greenhouse gases, and by far the largest use fresh water on the planet is farming. Something like 3/4 of the water, clean water that's used today around the world is in the farming and producing food.
Yeah.
And so as we look at this as this bridge between technology and business models, we're looking to see how we can reduce the use of water on farms. Historically, most companies, as an example, have worked to reduce water use within their own operations. Now, we've done that, and in fact, in 2014, we won the Stockholm Water Prize as recognition of leading our industry in conservation of water in our operations.
Yeah.
We were able to reduce water use by 26%, but mm-hmm. that's not enough. And what is important now for industries to go outside its four walls, and what we've done, if you look at our performance and purpose agenda for 2025, is to say we're going to reduce water use all the way up through our supply chain and reduce water use on in the farms by 15%. That's
yeah.
equal to twice as much water that's used in all our factories and operations. So that's
yeah.
an example. Now, how are we going to get there from a technology point of view? Well, to bring it close to where you are and home, we set about 5 years ago with a partnership with Cambridge University in England and
okay.
said, we're going to actually see if this is feasible. And what we set ourselves was a very ambitious goal. We said in our potato farming in England, we're going to reduce on the farms we were going to study around Cambridge the use of water by 50% in 5 years. So cut it by half.
Yeah.
And we're going to reduce greenhouse gas production in emissions by 50%. So that was 5 years ago. And 5 years later, what I'm very proud of is to say that we actually achieved this. And this was done using the latest technologies that are available today. So it was really designing the implementation, working with farmers, working with the university, and then ultimately collecting this data in what we call the Sustainable Farming Initiative. Now, you can imagine as we take this learning and share it with other farming systems in our supply chain, what the impact can be around our different global operations. So it's really bringing technology, academic expertise, and the scientists, our farmers and their knowledge, and ultimately bringing it to bear. And that's what a large company that does it with purpose actually can mm-hmm. help bring together. While we don't invent these technologies, we can go a long way to helping implement them, and that's what we've demonstrated. And
so,
we've got a lot of learning.
So continuing that, really, in terms of how are you investing or partnering with startups and incubators and earlier stage sort of type businesses? I can see how the big supply chains in the big potato farms or things like that, but how might you be doing it with smaller organizations?
So we're doing actually partnerships across the spectrum of size and capability from large corporations. But, you know, a lot of these new technologies like sensing mechanisms to sense moisture in the ground, the software technologies and to develop the algorithms aren't being done just by the big companies. They're being done by startups. And so
we're doing is
creating these partnerships, bringing them into our ecosystem. And as an example of that, we probably created over 50 partnerships in the last 5 years with everything from small tech startups, university spin-offs. I mean, many universities are creating these startups themselves. Cambridge is an example of that, as well as large companies. And what we can do through that model is bring the best available from around the world
mm-hmm.
to converge and focus on one major problem to solve. So everybody isn't doing it in isolation, but we're doing it in collaboration. And we're doing this with dozens of startups now. There's another model we're also doing, which is actually to invest in some of these startups through venture investments. And we've created partnerships with existing or new venture funds where their goal is to invest in these startups that have a strategic alignment with what we're trying to shape in the food and agricultural system. So a number of different models.
Yeah, and certainly what I'm seeing now in this corporate venturing space, I think it connects with what you're saying in that investing and finding different technologies, but the important thing, I think, is what I would term innovative new value chains. How do you string together these new technologies, new startups, new processes, which become quite sort of different business models and approaches than the traditional manufacturer put it on the shelf, because now the information and the relationship with the consumer and the supply chain is going to be so different. And I think the organizations that help to orchestrate that new value chain, I think you're talking about them, and I think it's going to be so important.
Let me elaborate on exactly
that. Sure.
So, I mean, let's take potatoes, for example. We within PepsiCo, through directly as well as partnerships with different companies, startups, and universities, to have the ability to breed new varieties of potatoes, and have been doing that, that use less water, have a higher yield, which means it's a greater opportunity for income for our farmers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then take those potatoes, create seed potatoes from that, contract with farmers to grow these potatoes. And we've done this not just in developed countries like England and North America and Europe, but, for example, in Mongolia, we introduced varieties of potatoes as well as irrigation technologies to create whole ecosystems and farms by knowledge transfer to the local community. From that, of course, you get livelihoods get better, which is part of our people agenda, but communities thrive. In this setting, I mean, they were able to now, from that income, build schools, build libraries in these villages, and then use that output of that where we actually are guaranteeing them purchasing of their crop, and in some cases at guaranteed prices because they just can't afford to take the risk of fluctuation. And we've done this in Asia as well as China. And from that, ultimately, we can then have a go-to-market in our product. So it's impacting the entire ecosystem. And the technologies that are brought are coming from whole variety of places, as we talk. So really shaping that whole business model and supply chain.
Yeah. One of the things in preparation for this call that you touched on, which I thought was great, was the intergenerational talent transfer. And would you mind elaborating on that, please? I thought that was a good different perspective on this challenge and approach as well.
Yeah, so there's two or three different problems that are coming on the people side and in terms of generations. The first, let's start within our industry. The average age of a scientist within industry today in Europe as well as in North America is over the age of 50. And there's lots of reasons around STEM, and everybody's been reading about the depletion of STEM talent at a time when the world needs innovation as a growth engine. We're actually running out of young science, engineering, mathematics, technology-trained people.
Yep.
So we need to figure out a way of transferring the existing knowledge from this diminishing pool to this next generation of younger scientists and attract the best and the brightest. And in my mind, you know, industries like life sciences and food and agriculture are the basic needs of any society, and
yep.
we have to bring that talent in. And how do we transfer that knowledge? In that example, we've been doing a lot of things. One is we were one of the founding members of the Global STEM Alliance, where we invested in part of the New York Academy of Sciences in multiple countries. In fact, the chair of that at inauguration was a member of my own executive team and a member of my staff, Heidi Kleinbeck. Building on that, we've been investing around the world similarly in encouraging and developing talent in emerging markets as well as in developed markets. Inside the company, we've done similar things, and as an example of that, we've created a global fellows program where we take our senior-most scientists who are world experts, and we've designated them as our PepsiCo fellows. In fact, there are now six of fellows, as well as a half a dozen other what we call associate fellows. they are the mentors, teachers, and role models for this next generation, and they're highly revered within the company. It takes a lot to become a fellow. Yeah. And it's something that young scientists are now aspiring to become, because not every scientist wants to become a large organizational or people manager. Some yeah. want to truly stay steeped in the science, and this gives them a career path. And then the last also, let's not forget the entire supply chain. And as is the case in the United Kingdom, in Western Europe, but also North America, the average age of farmers is getting older, and they're actually approaching in the mid-50s to late-50s.
Right.
Young people haven't stayed on the farm.
Yeah.
Well, we had better figure out ways of improving livelihoods, the quality of life, and then ultimately bring technologies to our rural communities, because we cannot, as a society, afford for our rural communities to be depleted of this knowledge and talent as well. So
yeah.
lots of things that we're doing in different ways. We're trying to do our part, and we hope we can bring along many other players in this process.
Yeah, no, I'm a great believer in what you're doing, and I also see it in that as well. I think as to some of the things that we've been doing over the last few years with the innovation groups, and me being the proud dad of now a 10-year-old and 14-year-old daughters, we've been doing little venture things. And when some of the organizations that I work see with some of the things my daughters have done, they've inspired us to create what we call upstarts for startups. So this is for children, typically in 8 to 14-year-olds, coming into corporate offices, but with their adults, and then doing joint exercises, innovation things on Minecraft and making things and doing entertainment things, just to teach them the basics of business, and also around the money they're raising then goes to charities. But the inspiration that gives the parents on seeing what the younger generation are doing and giving the younger generation insight into work and business and creating things for good has been really, really enlightening. We've really enjoyed doing that as well. So I can see what you're saying as well and what you're doing.
John, on that, I mean, in many ways, this next generation, and you're about to face it as your children become these adolescents.
Yeah.
You know, my generation, our parents told us what we should eat and drink and what was good for us. In this generation, it is younger children and adolescents who are reading, who are learning, who are coming
yes.
back asking our parents what it is, asking their parents what they're eating and telling them what is right and what is wrong and what is good for them and not. So we're seeing a very different environment in this next generation.
Yes, yeah. No, I see it with my 10-year-old. She tells me all about her cooking, and she watches YouTube channels and watches all sorts of content and is informing me about this sort of stuff as well. And she knows what's good and what's bad, so it's really
well,
good.
Well, you can imagine, I have three grown children and a grandson who's 7, and I go home to having the strongest critics of my day's work are sitting right in my own home.
Yes, yeah. No, the feeling. So, last one, I guess, really, in terms of, you know, the business sort of side comes in terms of performance. How do you sort of measure in the innovation space now, in the innovation stuff you're doing, how do you measure your metrics around the financial and strategic performance of your innovation activities that you're doing?
Well, look, the ultimate judge of everything we're doing from a business performance point of view is what consumers think and believe about our products, and ultimately that expresses itself when they buy our products and they choose to keep buying our products. Now, the good news for us is with all of the investment we've made in innovation, in R&D, and capability, it's paying off. And there's a couple of metrics that I can give you that are sort of financial and market metrics that sort of exemplify that. One is our innovation as a function, as a percentage of our net revenue, has now grown to be about 9%, and it's industry-leading. Only about 5 years ago, it was mid-single digit, somewhere around 4 to 5%. It's already 9% of about a $65 billion base revenue.
Yeah, that's a big base to be growing that speed, isn't it? Yeah.
And so it's wonderful. And then another way of looking at it is the largest market in the world as a measured channels for food and beverage in supermarkets is, of course, in North America. We are the number one contributor to growth for all supermarket growth of revenue for our customers, that is the supermarkets, in our category, in our food and beverage industry. In mm-hmm. fact, the next 10 companies or more combined, their growth combined equals that of ours. Right. And that tells you how much more and how much faster we're growing than our peers. And it speaks to really volumes of all the wonderful work my R&D, marketing, supply chain, operations, all of them collectively have been able to do to drive this innovation.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's good. That's great. So finally, Mahmood, you sounds like you're very busy with the work and driving this through. What do you manage to spend your time doing in terms of for hobby or interest? The children
well,
and grandchildren,
other
maybe?
Yeah, other than the, of course, children, now the grandchildren, my biggest hobby for a long time has been flying. Some people know this, but many people don't realize I'm an active pilot. I fly a twin-engine, multi-engine rating with instrument rating, and I fly very regularly. So I enjoy being a pilot. I fly all over the United States, from the East Coast all the way to the West, and that takes up a lot of time to keep my training up and keep it going, but I enjoy it.
Excellent. Mahmood, really appreciate your time. Really appreciate giving us your personal and PepsiCo perspective here on the big impact and the challenges and the things you're doing. Thank you much for your time.
Thank you. Take care.